Welcome to Wake Up Podcast with Viv Trader. Viv is a curious person with the desire to embrace different opinions and expertise. Her focus is health, well-being, environmental, and political. She holds a non-judgmental approach and she is objective. Viv's ambition is to raise your awareness and contribute to a better world. She is also the founder of Vivalicious Food, which produces an innovative vegan baby food with added omega-3 from an algae oil. www.vivaliciousfood.com.
So today I have the real pleasure of inviting Eliza Song. Hello, Eliza. So nice to see you.
Hi, how are you, Viv? Great to be
here. Yeah, I've been so excited. I've been waiting quite a few weeks now to meet with you. And now, Eliza, where are you in the world?
So I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, about 20 minutes south in California.
Yeah, have you got some lovely hot weather as well?
It is not too warm right now. We've been unseasonably cold and we've had a ton of rain here, you know, since the winter.
Wow.
So okay. I know I am really looking forward to warmer weather, but you know, more typical weather for this summer. So we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll arrive. Now, Eliza, can you please tell me, who are you?
Yeah, so I am a mom. I mean, that's probably my most important role in this world. My kids are now tweens and teens. Kenzie is 13 and Bodhi is 11, about to turn 12 this summer. So they really define now, you know, my goals and the legacy that I want to live and leave for them. So that's, you know, really drives as a family. You know, we have what we do always keeps in mind, how this will help, our well-being as a family. Right. Mm. And I'm also an integrated pediatrician so that, you know, I can really, live in the way at home that I teach my patients. And so, my kids, knock on wood, are super healthy. And some of that is, yes, we don't have many chronic illnesses that run in the family, but we have our fair share. And, you know, this is to hopefully, teach the kids that no matter what is in your genetic history, we have the power to really influence how our genes express themselves, you know, how our ultimate health outcomes. And, you know, we just want to move forward with positivity and with hope and with joy. And so, you know, how I live as a mom also informs how I am as an integrated pediatrician. I always, you know, for the moms who in my practice and also follow me online, it's really important that I not just give my perspective and knowledge as a functional medicine integrated pediatrician, but also give really practical tips, you know, and have parents know that everything that I recommend is completely doable. It may not necessarily be the easiest shifts to make, but they're doable because I do them in my home and I you know, support parents in doing them in their homes.
So you're very hands-on with your practical advice. You live as a living example, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. Now, how come you became more diversified to holistic care versus, you know, the traditional
medicine? Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in a medical household. My mother was an OBGYN and you know, that's what I knew. She was really busy, you know, every day, every night. She'd be off in the middle of the night, you know, at any time of the year delivering babies. And, you know, she always, her office was attached to our house. So she always prioritized coming in and having dinner with us, which is, I mean, knowing the power of the family meal and the importance of future health for kids. I'm so glad that she did that. But she was busy and I didn't see anything in medicine that I wanted to be a part of. So I actually had no intention of being a physician. I did always know that I loved working with children and being around children. So I wasn't sure what my path was. You know, when I went to Stanford as an undergraduate student, I actually thought maybe I'd be a teacher, maybe I'd be, and then I became really interested in advocacy for children. And so I decided I was going to go to law school and be a lawyer, be a children's advocate, you know, work in Washington, D.C., lobbying for children's rights. And, you know, I was a public political science with a public policy, you know, emphasis. And that was my route until it dawned on me that I would be doing amazing work for children, but I wouldn't necessarily be working with children. And that really was, you know, something that was important to me. And so I decided, you know, towards the end of my Stanford years, the summer between junior and senior year, you know, I think I'm going to look at being a pediatrician again, but in a different way, because I had already, you know, during that time, you know, seen these flyers around campus for conference of the American Holistic Medical Association. I was like, what is holistic medicine? And when I learned, you know, what holistic medicine could be, and I went to this conference, I thought, you know what, that sounds like something I could do. And it's informed my path ever since. I mean, it was often a lonely path, you know, in the early 90s, when there really weren't a lot of physicians, you know, pursuing integrative medicine. It wasn't even called integrative medicine then. It was called complementary and alternative medicine. And now we know it's not really shouldn't be an alternative. It really should be a part of, you know, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, understanding that there's a time and a place for, you know, conventional medicine, for prescription medicine, but there's also a lot of downstream unintended side effects that we need to understand. And how can we then use an integrated approach to really help kids thrive from the inside out? So anyhow, it's been, you know, kind of a curvy journey, but it's always been children first and a more holistic approach.
Wow, that sounds amazing. So you obviously love children, and then you want to be there for them, help them, and make sure they have the best start in life to thrive and become as happy as possible. That's so beautiful. Now, what is the most common disease that you experience amongst children? Is there a general theme that you can you see a pattern or something? Or,
you know, I mean, nowadays it's I mean, we know that kids are suffering from many, many different chronic health concerns. And some of them are, quote, more mild. And some of them are more severe, you know, like autoimmune illnesses. The issue is that for many children, they have persistent health concerns. They have concerns, you know, maybe it's constipation, but it's not going away. So, you know, some would say, well, constipation is not severe. Yes, but if it's lasting for months to years, and the only option given by your physician is to be on Miralax, you know, for decades, I would say that child is not optimally well, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have this crisis of sort of unwell children, even if they're feeling okay. Right? We should feel more than okay. We should feel amazing. We should feel vibrant. You know, our kids should feel vibrant and be thriving. So, you know, what are the most common, you know, nowadays, I would say really is mental health concerns, you know, behavioral issues, sensory issues, kids who are, you know, quote, neurodiverse. But I would say nowadays, neurodiversity is probably more common than being neurotypical. We have a crisis of mental health, you know, all over the world, but in, you know, in the States, we know, you know, anxiety and depression, even, you know, suicidal, you know, ideation have really been a major, major influence on children's health, teenage health. And in fact, is, you know, really, once you get to your preteen and teen years, a higher concern than the vast majority of other chronic health concerns. Now, that being said, you know, we have also, you know, this huge rise in kids with a category of illnesses called atopy. So eczema, asthma, allergies, there's just allergic march. So, so that is huge as well. You know, so I don't, you know, it doesn't, it's, and it's all sort of interrelated, you know, from in my mind, you know, as I do the work and do the research and really try to dive in into what is going on for our children. And a lot of it, I mean, many listeners have heard, you know, that Hippocrates is credited with saying that all disease starts in the gut. And, you know, for our children, where they're developing gut microbiome is so instrumental, you know, from even before they're born and in the first 2 to 3 years of age, so key in informing how their brain health develops and how their immune health develops, and all the factors in those early years of life that disrupt their gut microbiome and gut health. It's no wonder that now in our modern world that, you know, we are facing a crisis of immune health and mental health in our younger kids and older kids and our teenagers. And then it just trickles on into adulthood.
And what's the distraction, like what is the normal patterns or behaviors? Or can you give me some examples? So
you mean in their gut microbiome or
how do you sort of make
you know, the key in now my work and you know, I actually have a book coming out in March of 2024 that's really focused on educating parents and children on, you know, how their gut health affects the way they think and you know, feel and how they behave and how their immune system acts and really understanding how do we set the foundations of a healthy gut microbiome. And for most kids and adults, you know, how do we address a gut microbiome that maybe may already be dysregulated or disrupted? The major factors, so when we start from, you know, from in utero, you know, from even before you're born, and, you know, when babies are born and in the early stages of life, the factors that really impact their gut microbiome are, you know, were they exposed to antibiotics? Whether it was, you know, mom's getting antibiotics when she was pregnant for maybe a UTI or a sinus infection, you know, did the baby and mom receive antibiotics during delivery? You know, whether it's for a mother's group B strep, you know, positive status, or, you know, because it was a cesarean section birth, or maybe there were other complications. And also how the baby was fed, you know, was the baby formula fed or was the baby breastfed? And so all of those, and this is not to say, you know, and go back and, you know, for moms who, if you had a C-section or you needed antibiotics during delivery or, you know, your baby was formula fed, that's okay. We start from there and we know, okay, those are factors that can disrupt the gut microbiome. And now we know how to recover and restore a healthy gut microbiome. But if we have that choice, you know, from the start, if we know, okay, that my baby and I will get antibiotics because I have group B strep, you know, vaginal culture show group B strep, I would say, yes, you know, get the antibiotics. I mean, that's what I did for my son. My daughter didn't need them. My son did, you know, in those early days, because I don't want them to have complications from group B strep. I was lucky enough to know that that could, you know, start his gut microbiome off to a less and, you know, healthy, optimal start in life. So I knew to take probiotics myself and to eat a gut nourishing diet and, you know, to really focus on supporting successful breastfeeding and to give him probiotics, you know, from the start. And so I want parents to have that knowledge. And then if their babies are older, you know, if you have toddlers or school age kids or teenagers and you're thinking back, okay, yeah, they got antibiotics, you know, however many times, or, you know, psychological stress is a huge factor in disrupting the gut microbiome, or they're really, you know, quote, picky eaters, and they only eat a handful of, you know, ultra processed foods that can really wreak havoc on the gut microbiome. How do we teach our kids, and how do we, you know, live in a way that can then restore resilience to their gut microbiomes? So that's the key, I think, to overall health, you know, whether or not it's, you know, your child is suffering from, you know, mental health concerns or behavioral concerns, or they have any immune system concerns, is really focusing on gut microbiome resilience. What are those foundations, no matter where you're starting from?
And I read that today Americans consume about 60-80% processed food on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these ultra processed foods and for, you know, once your kids are in school, I mean, when they're little, I have a lot of parents who say, okay, my kids, the whatever I put in front of them, great vegetable eaters. And then all of a sudden something happens. And then maybe they're in preschool and there's, you know, potlucks and, you know, there's this exposure to other foods that you didn't start off your kids with. And then for sure, once they're in elementary school, middle school, high school, in elementary school, I mean, some of our free lunch programs or free breakfast programs, my kids showed me. So we are fortunate enough to not need to use the free school breakfast and school lunch programming, but some parents, they need to, and some children, they need to, or they want to. And yet we are not doing a service for our children, for their brains and for their immune systems and their gut by feeding them, quote, multigrain frosted flakes for breakfast, which is an option, you know, at our school. And so really understanding, how do we give our kids the best chance to be successful in the way that they want to be successful? And guaranteed, no kid wants to be called out by their teacher, you know, 50 times in a class for wiggling or touching their neighbor or going on the floor and not being able to sit still and pay attention. And I mean, the kids don't want that. Teachers don't want that. Parents don't want that. So now it's really up to, you know, integrative pediatricians, functional medicine physicians, to help kids, parents, teachers connect the dots between mm-hmm. what their kids are eating mm-hmm. and behaviors. Or, I mean, no kid or parent wants their kid to be out sick, you know, every other week with another thing, right? And so, you know, connect the dots, make those connections so that
Do you see a lot of food addiction in children?
There's certainly a lot of sugar addiction. There's certainly addiction to ultra processed foods. You know, ultra processed foods are foods that are, you know, highly refined, go through many, many industrial steps and use many, many different, you know, chemicals, even if they're natural chemicals, to make foods sweeter, saltier, greasier, essentially more addictive so that mm-hmm. you want to eat more of it. And you start craving that food. And, you know, food manufacturers, they fully are aware of you know, how to make more food, how to make food processed in a way that kids and adults, their taste buds and their brains, you know, get trained to want more and more and more and more of that. And so, you know, it's
Dr.
really
Joan,
doing.
Yeah. I had Dr. Joan Ifland in my podcast, and she talked about this, the tobacco industry. Now the processed food industry has copied the business model, the addiction
That's
model.
That's right. And, you know, it's sort of this, you know, now it's being masked as, you know, healthy foods. You see on the front, high fiber, high protein, multi-grain, gluten-free, you know, sugar-free. Well, you know, that's the front of the box. I tell kids when I teach them how to read labels, just ignore what's on the front of the box. Parents, mm-hmm. ignore what's on the front of the box. That is all labeling. It's the front of the cover, right? We teach our kids, don't judge a book by its cover. That is all to get you to look at the package and think, oh, maybe this actually is healthier for me. Because a lot of parents now and kids now are more savvy to the fact that, oh, okay, I don't want too much sugar. Maybe I don't want something with artificial dyes, but just because it's made with fruit doesn't mean that it's actually good for you.
Yeah. And it's also been, scientifically proven that the processed food leads to depression. So do you think, obviously, we're suffering a mental health crisis. Do you think that's partially due to we totally eating wrong foods?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they found that children who eat ultra processed foods, you know, as toddlers are more likely by the time they're in elementary school to have concerns for ADHD, behavioral concerns, you know, mental health concerns. So absolutely, there's that link from, you know, what kids eat in toddlerhood, even, you know, through their behaviors and their mental health in elementary and even older ages. And I do think, you know, there is also the fact that the ultra processed foods, the especially the artificial dyes and the preservatives, you know, there is a movement now, and there have been over the decades, you know, different policy groups who have tried to get rid of artificial dyes, you know, that neon, you know, that the red 40 and the, you know, blue lake six or whatever the number is, right? Because we know that that can affect children's brains. And in fact, in Europe, you know, any foods that have artificial dyes or preservatives must have a warning label on it that food can adversely affect children's attention and behaviors. We don't have warnings like that in the States, but we should. And, you know, now California, there's a move to try to get rid of some of these chemicals, but parents need to be aware. And if there's a, you know, if we could really understand that, and then I think, you know, it's the direct impact to the brain, also the direct impact to the gut microbiome, because a lot of these food additives have been shown to directly harm the gut microbiome. And any disruption to the gut microbiome, I mean, let's take antibiotics, for instance. And I always preface this with the fact that both my children had antibiotics when they were under a year of age, right? They needed to. My daughter had a urinary tract infection that, you know, at a month of age, right? We don't want to risk not taking antibiotics. And my son had strep when he was 5 weeks of age. And so they had antibiotics. Now, again, I knew how to mitigate the adverse effects of their microbiome, but we know that antibiotics given in the first several years of life, and especially in the first 6 months of life, can significantly increase the risk of allergic diseases, asthma, eczema, hives, you know, food allergies by the time kids are four. And it can significantly increase the risk of any mental health concern in older kids and teenagers by up to 50%. And the more rounds the antibiotics, the higher the risk. So I say that not to instill fear, but so parents know, okay, you know what, if my child is suffering from anxiety or attention concerns or behavioral concerns, you know, let's look at the gut, because yes, they had antibiotics many times when they were kids. So maybe it's from that. And that's really the first place to start, you know, with any health concern.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, most normal traditional doctors throw out antibiotics, you know, it's very, very common. We're talking about it, you know, being resistant to antibiotics because we overconsume it. Yeah. And then the side effects are terrifying. I didn't know this, that can have a massive impact on your gut health, and that then of course is this.
Yeah, absolutely. And
the
that's
door opener
where,
to,
yeah, I mean, just understanding, like I said, sometimes antibiotics are necessary, but unfortunately for children, some studies have shown that up to maybe 70% of antibiotics are inappropriately prescribed to children, maybe stronger than they need it, but oftentimes inappropriately prescribed for viral infections for which antibiotics aren't going to do a thing. And so being able to have that dialogue with your physician and asking questions, I mean, literally ask them, doc, is this really necessary? Why ask that question? That seems like a silly question to ask, but studies have found that physicians are much more likely to write a prescription for an antibiotic if they believe that that patient wants an antibiotic prescription, even if they think that the situation, that the infection is viral and probably antibiotics aren't going to help. So just by asking the question and saying, hey, doc, can I ask you, is this really necessary? It's opening the door and letting that physician know, oh, maybe this mom doesn't just want the prescription and to get out the door, right? Which some parents do want that prescription. But if they know that you're one of the parents that really want to be judicious in your antibiotic use and really only use it when it's necessary, it can then set that physician's brain to going and collaborating and saying, you know what, there's a good chance that this is viral. Maybe we wait and see, right? So just, you know, being able to advocate in that way and ask the questions is important.
And dare to ask, you know, a lot of people are scared to question someone with authority, but perhaps we should rethink that and don't put too much trust ourselves. And right. We were talking before we started this interview about allergies. Are they on the rise amongst children?
So absolutely. You know, even among adults, it's fascinating how many parents in my practice, you know, all of a sudden in their later years as adults, they start having terrible, you know, seasonal allergies, or it's getting worse and worse and worse, or they all of a sudden have allergies to foods that they never had as children. Like, you know, one parent who, I mean, would eat nuts and shellfish and, you know, I mean, no problem eating these foods, but then all of a sudden in their late 20s or their 30s, they start having hives or itchy mouth or these weird allergic reactions, and now are carrying EpiPens. And so, you know, we can have some conjecture on why. I mean, there's different theories as to why. I mean, I think though, first, again, like anything else, we have to look at the gut. The gut, when your gut, one of the most important roles of your gut microbiome is to distinguish friend or foe. Is this food, friend, that I want to let into my bloodstream and absorb and digest and absorb and use the nutrients from that food? Or is this food foe? Is this something that I'm meant to attack, right? And so we're seeing a lot of this. And sometimes when your gut microbiome, because 70% of our immune system lies in our gut, and our gut microbiome is one of the most important parts of our immune system. When your gut decides this is foe and starts attacking that food or that bacteria or whatever it is, your immune system can then actually do the wrong thing and attack the wrong thing. And in attacking that food can actually attack a part of you, a part of your body that looks like that food or that bacteria or that virus or whatever it is.
And we're talking processed food again, right?
Yeah, it could be processed foods, or it could be a food that you shouldn't react to, like corn or any other citrus. And then that triggers the wrong attack, can trigger an autoimmune reaction. And so it still comes down to, how do I get my gut in order so that it recognizes these foods as something that's safe for me, right? Or recognizes these pollens or, whatever it is, as something that I shouldn't go on the offensive and attack. And so if we have a healthy gut microbiome with, a healthy balance and variety of different probiotic species, not a lot of abnormal, species in there. And I'm talking, not just bacteria, but, we know there are a lot of viruses in our gut and yeast in our gut, and even some parasites that can help, that aren't all bad, right? So if we have that healthy mix, then our gut microbiome can tell our immune system, you got to settle down, right? This food is okay for us. And we heal the gut microbiome, we heal something called leaky gut. And a lot of times these allergies start to dissipate. Now, when anaphylactic food allergies are a little bit different. I mean, once you're at the stage where food is anaphylactic, I would not tell a parent, of a child with anaphylactic food allergies to heal the gut and then just load your kid up with all of those foods. It takes a little more care working with an allergist. Some children will need allergy desensitization, to be able to be around those foods safely. But at the same time, working on their gut, healing that gut can often help to reduce the reactivity to foods. And also, if children don't have food allergies, but more food sensitivities that aren't anaphylactic, a lot of those will start to go away and let the immune system calm down and start acting appropriately.
Wow. So the gut is really the center of everything, really.
It's not quite as, I don't want to make it sound so simplistic. You heal the gut and everything gets better. But I tell you what, you heal the gut and a lot of things get better.
A good starting point.
And then we have to work on, what are the other issues? What are, some of the environmental toxins that maybe your child or you are being exposed to that we need to really remove? Are there things like mold that we need to detoxify? Psychological stress will cause as much disruption to the gut microbiome as ultra processed foods and sugars. So how do we manage the psychological stress that is just ever present in our lives? And and in that, we're helping the gut brain connection. What comes first? When you heal the gut microbiome, it can make stress more manageable. But we also, over the years, learn patterns of managing stress that aren't the healthiest patterns. So then it's work on our part and our children's part to learn the breath work and the mindfulness and, doing some vagus nerve work, maybe, if you're doing emotional freedom technique, tapping or meditation, learning these tools so that our brain can learn new patterns that are healthier.
Yeah. The rewiring of your brain.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm. Or we can talk forever about this. I mean, time is flying. Now, what is the biggest fear you have faced in your life so far, or have?
The biggest fear, it's interesting. I wouldn't say that fear has been a big part of my life, which, I'm fortunate about. And I think that's an interesting question, because, I think there are some things that I've been hesitant about, you know, when I was making the decision to leave conventional medicine and, you know, really embark on an integrative pediatric journey, which was from the very beginning what I wanted to do. It wasn't so much fear, but more like, what if it doesn't work, right? What am I doing? I'm leaving this, the security, right? But then, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, what if you don't do this, right? You know, there's two, you know, the fork in the road, right? And so, you know, I think in any decision you have to make, right, the fear sometimes, actually for some, the fear of success is bigger than the fear of failure, right? So that so you just have to think, well, where is that fear, or what is holding you back? I guess in terms of fear, I think, and again, this wasn't so much fear, but when my mother during the pandemic was dying of cancer, it was more the helplessness, right? In our lives. And for me, when I feel helpless, for parents too, when you think about it, the times when you might be the most fearful for your child are when you don't know what's going to happen, when you feel like things are out of your control. And I guess, you know, that in the very beginning of the pandemic, before we even went into lockdown, when this virus was just, you know, becoming this thing that we're like, do we have to worry about this virus, you know, out of Wuhan? And so in March, a couple of weeks before lockdown, my kids got COVID and we didn't know what it was. And we couldn't even test for it. I was waiting for swabs. And I guess that one moment was the most fearful of my life, right? When my son got very sick and actually ended up in the hospital, with all the signs of what we know, you know, back now know were the signs of heading towards MISC, multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. And I remember, I mean, it's funny, interesting how life prepares you for these challenges. In February, I started having fear about this virus, right? February of 2020, didn't know what was going on. My patients were afraid, family was afraid. And when I have fear, I dig down and do the research. So I dug in my heels. I did all the research I could on, you know, we knew it was a corona type virus, right? Did all the research I could from a functional medicine standpoint. What do we know about sepsis? What do we know about cytokine storm? What do we know about supporting your immune system? And I wrote this huge, long article, What an Integrative Pediatrician Wants You to Know, about coronavirus. And at that point, it wasn't called COVID-19. WHO gave a name for it later. And, you know, within half an hour, I mean, that our website almost crashed because that article went, I mean, I hate to say the word viral. No pun intended, but, and, you know, it's had, you know, over 1.4 million views, but it was so quick because of the fear. And when you have the fear, you need to know. So that prepared me when my son was going through this and I just knew, okay, his oxygen is dropping. Something is not right. He was getting really sick. And I'm like, what is going on?
And he's 13?
Well, at that time he was 8. Right. Eight years old. And so, I was equipped because I knew what supplements to give, I knew when to go to the hospital. I knew all of these things and thankfully fully recovered, no complications now. But that is, you know, when you have fear like that, you know, as a parent, you want to get knowledge, right? Knowledge truly is power. And same thing with my mom. It was the fear, I mean, just not knowing what we could do to help support her. Right. And so, I guess that's a roundabout way of saying to moms and dads, parents, when you are afraid, when you fear something about your child's health or something that's going on with your child, then, you know, do the research, try to find, a pediatrician to collaborate with, hopefully an integrated pediatrician that can help you, help open your eyes to maybe different tools that, that you hadn't thought of. You know, different ways of thinking that might support your child's health from the inside out, so that they can really, really heal from whatever was going on and move forward and thrive.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Very personal. Now, where do you hope we are in 10 years in the world from now, from your viewpoint?
In 10 years, I hope that all kids and parents understand what it means, why it's so important and what it means to have a healthy gut microbiome. And I want all children to understand how to choose foods that are serving their brains and their bodies and their immune system. And with that, I mean, my mission is to help kids understand how to be, quote, gut heroes, right? So be a gut hero, learn how to read packages like a gut hero, learn how to live like a gut hero, so that every choice that they make, they understand they're being gut heroes, so that they can help their brains be happy, their immune systems be strong, and their bodies be as healthy as possible. And we can do that as children and parents. And when that happens, we automatically start voting with our dollars, choosing foods that aren't ultra processed, choosing packaged foods that are minimally processed and don't have all of those, you know, added additives that the food industry then can listen and say, look, the market is not there. Right? Mm. We need to start making foods that are truly defined as healthy. And, you know, children and families can understand what that means for them.
Mm. Absolutely. And not choosing profit first, perhaps health should be the values.
Yes.
Big corporations should aim for provide health, not
yeah.
profit.
And unfortunately, I mean, most corporations are not going to do that of their own volition. So mm-hmm. they need our wallets, right? They need to
yeah.
see where are we using our purchasing power to mm-hmm. to force corporations to make those decisions.
And politicians as well. Always yes. play an active part in legislation. And yeah. So basically, to summarize it all, food is medicine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Eliza. It's been absolutely so wonderful to hear you and meet you today. And the love, your eyes are sparkling. I can see your passion. You certainly are on a big mission and you love it, I can tell.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's been an honor.
I hope you got some valuable information today. Wake up, wake up. And thanks for checking in and waking up. See you next time.